Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Seychelle Van Poole.
I'm Sarah Reynolds.
And I'm Wendy Papazan. Welcome back, guys. We are on episode 4 of our money series. Woo! So excited.
Number four.
And if you haven't listened to episodes 1 through 3, I highly, highly recommend you go back. Episode number 1, we talk about how to figure out your financial freedom number. Then we get into some wealth building habits in episodes number 2 and 3. And the next 3 episodes we're going to talk about are sort of more of the kinds of investments that you can make and how they work. So a real sort of just tactical episode. And then we're going to share a lot about some of the investing that we've done. So, yeah. And before I forget, I just wanted to remind everyone, if these episodes are resonating with you and you're thinking to yourself, gosh, I would like to learn more. I would like to grow my financial wealth, and I'd like to learn more about it. Feel free to pop over to herbestlife.com/masterclasses. We have a special discount code for Empire Building Podcast for our Her Rich Life class. And you guys, it's different than the podcast, okay? The podcast is just us spitballing about stuff and talking about our journey. And the masterclass is extremely tactical, and it's got a workbook,
and homework,
it has questions, and it's thought-provoking. Yeah, you can't do the masterclass while you're driving around in your car or running around the lake. So our code is EBP, which is Empire Building Podcast, and we're just so excited to jump in.
Yeah, so if you want to become a master of building your wealth, we highly, highly recommend Her Rich Life Masterclass. So now the big thing and really the foundational sort of principle of what we're going to talk about today is investing versus saving, right? So there's a difference between investing versus just saving, becoming a hoarder of cash, right? Gary Keller, one of our mentors, says you can't save your way to financial success. There's actually no way that you can just save to financial success. And so today we're going to be really diving into investment strategies and how they work and how we have built a lot of our wealth.
I love that. Well, and you know, I think about it when you're investing, there's usually like one thing that kind of gets the ball rolling. I'd be curious, Sarah, like, do you remember what your first investment was?
Yeah, it was actually my first house. And I had just gotten my real estate license. So this was in you had to actually show that you were worthy of a mortgage. Then you did not. So I had just graduated from college, got my real estate license, and had it about a year. Did okay my first year. I did more than okay. I did great my first year.
You did really well.
But I didn't have like any foundational of like show a record of doing well, right? And I bought a $500,000 townhome, which is just insane to think about as my first house. But the townhouse had a basement with a actual bedroom and bathroom. And then it had 3 bedrooms on the upper level. And so I rented it out. So I lived in the master bedroom or the owner's bedroom and rented out the other 2 bedrooms upstairs and rented out the basement. And so with my mortgage payment and rent, they basically paid all of my mortgage except for the HOA dues. We did that. So I bought that in 2007. We continued to rent out our basement even after George and I were married. But that was our first investment, was that house, and rented it out probably until about 2010. And then we kept it. It's been a great investment for us. But that was our first one. What about you, Seth?
That's so cool. You know, the first time I really learned about investing was when I turned 17, my dad took me up to Fidelity and set up a Roth IRA with me. And I had been working and like doing like I was a cheerleading and gymnastics coach and like did babysitting, you know, and different things during high school. And so he was like, okay, you've been saving this money. We're going to go invest it. And whatever you invest, he was like, I'll match. So anything you invest, I'll match it. And then he kind of helped me learn the compounding interest game of, you know, like if you put $3,000 in today, in 30 years, it will be worth $50,000. You know, and when you're like 17, you're like, whoa, that's amazing. So that was the first time. And then we invested in real estate later. We can talk about that when we get into real estate investing. But that was the first time like I had really learned about the stock market or heard about just what money could do without just saving it. Cause I just had like a, I'm sure just like a pile of cash or something in my bedroom, which is not like the best way to do that. So how about you, Wendy? What was your first? Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like all cheerleading private, you know, lessons or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Back when you got cash for all that stuff.
Yeah. It was all just like parents handing you cash. Wendy, what was your like first investment you made or when did you kind of get introduced to investing?
Well, I worked for a small company when I was living in New York and we just didn't have a 401k. I mean, we were like 15 people. And so we just didn't have one. And I remember Jay, after we got married, he told me that he'd been investing in his 401k at HarperCollins. So I was in Austin. So I was like probably 27 or I guess 28 before I started really investing. And I worked for my second job here in Texas was I worked for the state of Texas. So they had a Texas retirement fund. Mm-hmm. And so I just did the money there. I got matched. And then when I left after 4 or 5 years of that, I had about $10,000. And I thought, well, I'll just roll it into Apple stock. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's probably kind of, it was kind of stupid, probably when I think back on it. But in retrospect, of course, it was an amazing investment because
that
$10,000, this was in 2004.
Wow.
So that $10,000 in 2004, I just looked at it this morning. It's now worth over $176,000.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I paid $11.96 a share for it. And it's been great. It's been great with the stock. It's been great with the stock market going up and down because Apple stock is very stable. It's very stable. It's definitely split since then. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty random. I always talk about what a great like stock guru I am, but Jay's.
So I still have my first investment, which was my first house. Yeah. Say, do you still have the Fidelity account?
Oh, yeah. We've rolled it over like just to blend it with all of our other stuff, but I still have that same Roth IRA. Like it's invested in different things now, but yeah, it's the same IRA.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
So like, what is the mix of your, like, before we dive into, you know, investing more granularly, if you were to look at your portfolio, what does that blend look like for you right now?
I could actually find that. So we're at, of course, mostly real estate, 42% real estate. That doesn't include our house. Our house would probably add another 10% there, something like that, 10-15%. And then
your primary residence, just to make sure.
My primary residence. My primary residence. So 42% of our investments without my house in it are rental properties. And then we've got 11% in the stock market. And that's just really, you know, Jay's been just putting the max every year with his, you know, 401k, whatever, for the life, for as long as he's been working. So it's been a long time now. And that's that's really added up. We have a little bit in some other income. We have 1% in hard money loans. We've been doing some hard money loans recently. We have a bunch in businesses. So 17% is in businesses. 1% is in other businesses. It's more like angel investing. So maybe we've invested like $5,000 here, $10,000 here. And then we have about 8% in cash. So
cool.
Good. Similar mix. We have 48% without our primary residence is real estate. So both residential and commercial real estate. And then we've got 35% is our businesses, mm-hmm. which I was actually surprised. I thought our business, we were talking about this before we started recording. I thought my businesses would be number one, but real estate's still mm-hmm. winning, which I'm proud of. Yeah. I think that's good. But super proud of our businesses being at 35% of our investments. Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. And then only 6% in the stock market. So we just start. George has always invested in his 401k because he's always been part of a company that has had that. Mm-hmm. We just started a 401k a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago for Empower Home. And we mm-hmm. have, and so I do that, of course. And then we also started investing with a financial advisor in the last year. So we have only 6% right now in the stock market and then 11% cash. So I'm mm-hmm. a big believer in making sure you got enough cash to have peace of mind. So.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. And for everybody, that number is different, which is really cool. And then we're sitting at, we've got 66% in real estate. 2% is actually the cash value of our life insurance. So we look at that. We have 12. Yeah. And it's cool though, because the like life insurance actually overinsures then all of our real estate being paid off and then some. So like it's actually a hedge against the real estate side because we are heavier in real estate. 12% businesses, 8% stock. And then we're a little bit higher on cash right now because we're sitting on it ready to invest. So we're 14% cash, getting ready to deploy some of that. So that's super fun. So
you're buying the drinks, obviously, Seychelle.
Yeah, I know. Ranch waters for all. If you're coming to Texas.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so the first thing we're talking about today is in our investment series is real estate. I mean, duh, right? Mm-hmm. We all mm-hmm. own real estate businesses. And, you know, it's kind of strange because a lot of times you'll talk to financial advisors and they won't mention real estate at all. And so mm-hmm. I won't even work with anyone if they don't own rental properties because they just don't understand it, you know? So mm-hmm. having somebody who understands that is just really important. So
I mean, I always
think
about how cool it is from like when you want to invest $100,000 in stock, you're putting $100,000 in the stock market, right? If you want to buy a $100,000 property, mm-hmm. it only takes $20,000 to $25,000 to buy the $100,000 rental property, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other investments that you can do like real estate in that way in terms of not using 100% of your money. And so it's just so powerful, such a powerful thing. So if you do not own a home, we cannot stress enough, buy a house, own a home. My first investment, like I said, was my house. And then I house hacked it. Meaning I had renters living with me, and paying the mortgage. And so your very first investment, should be real estate. You have to pay to live somewhere. Millionaires are made off of owning real estate. And so buy your first home, get renters in, rent out bedrooms. You can buy a duplex as well. But what I did was just rented out the other two bedrooms upstairs and I rented out the basement. And that covered my mortgage fully. First and foremost, buy real estate.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. Well, and you know, if you're buying real estate, you know, for us, like, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, you know, our first home was an investment property. We returned all of our wedding gifts at the age of 22 and just bought real estate instead and still own that, right? And
I love that.
I know, it's the best gift. That, I mean, we put... At that point, you could put, I think, 5% down because, you know, it was still 07. What was it, 06 when we bought it? But so we put in
5% down.
Mm-hmm. You can. So we put, I think it was like 13,000 down. That's true.
Such a baller.
13,500. And I think our loan balance on that now is like 70,000 and it's worth 350 today. You know, so it's like you turn 13,000 into that. It's kind of fun.
I have a better story than that.
All right, let's hear it. Fancy.
Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas in the house.
I know your numbers are crazy with you guys. Yeah, your first one. What did you buy your first one?
175. We put 3.5% down. So we spent about $6,200 for it. And we lived in it for 3 years. We had complete strangers, been paying down the debt for 17 years. We owe about $75,000 on it. It's worth $950,000.
You fancy. That's awesome. That's amazing. But like, what else, what other investment can you do where someone's literally paying down your principal balance? I mean, that's just, it's like, how is this possible? It's amazing.
I tell my tenants, thank you for paying my mortgage. Thanks for paying my debt off. I appreciate you.
Yeah. We've had the same tenants in that property the whole time. It's amazing.
Well, I tell that to my tenants and they're like, oh, maybe we should buy a house. I'm like, yeah.
I know. Sure. Yeah. Use me though. You're like, use me when you do that. Mm-hmm. So something, if you are, if you have a business or you have a rental property and you're considering short-term rentals is, and that could be like short-term rentals means like one night or 1 week, right? It's a shorter term. Make sure you're checking with your local laws and ordinances if you can do that, because there's a lot of areas now that are starting to limit that more. But something that even if you haven't turned a property into a short-term rental yet, but let's say you have a second home or your own house, you can do what's called the Augusta rule on the IRS code. And that is, again, not a certified CPA. I'm going to give you that disclosure really quick. Not a certified financial tax advisor or CPA. So check with your financial advisor and tax accountant. So there's your CYA for us for the whole episode. There is something called the Augusta rule, which is you can rent out your home for 14 days and pay yourself like a venue rental fee where you can rent it out for up to 14 days without reporting that income to the IRS. So your business can literally pay to rent out one of your properties. Because if you were like we had our Pi Day not long ago, we rented a ballroom at a hotel. You could do that same thing at one of your houses and rent it that way too.
Which we do.
Yeah, which is awesome.
And you can do that. So you can do that for a second home too. Mm-hmm. So we do that also for our ranch. We pay our ranch as well.
Yeah.
Because a big part of as you're building wealth is taxes are a major expense.
Yeah.
Right. And if you can invest your money correctly, you can understand how to build wealth through the way that the government's wanting us to build wealth, which is helping our country. And what they have different rules in place, like the Augusta rule, where you can take some of your income from your business and pay yourself for, of course, you have to do it, like renting out your house or having an event at your home. Anytime you have an event at your home, you would invoice it just at whatever the equivalent location would cost, you can invoice it. And that's a way of reducing your taxable income and then also helping turn your current home into an investment.
This is so important, Sarah, because I think for a long time, I know Jay and I just had this thought like, oh, well, we're just supposed to pay our taxes. You know, we're just going to pay our taxes.
Yeah.
And we didn't really take, I'm not going to say take advantage, but we didn't really understand the tax rules that were in place in order for us to essentially save money on our taxes. And you know, when you have a very high income, that's just, you know, it's a lot of money. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars that you're paying in taxes every year. And we just thought for the longest time, we thought, well, that's just what we do. We're going to be good citizens. Yeah. And we've really changed our thinking on that because it's exactly what you said, Sarah, which is the government is giving us, you know, ways to save money. They want us to do certain things and they're going to reward us for them.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too. You said the phrase, you know, we want to be good citizens. And what I love about you two and what we do as well is there's a number of ways to define that and give back and be a good citizen in your community, whether it's creating jobs, it's creating stable housing, whether it's giving back to charity or teaching and leading others. Like there's all these different ways that I know that both of you are that. And so looking at how you define that, not just from a tax perspective, but also from how you show up in the world perspective, I think is something that you both do really beautifully. While we're on the short-term rental side, a couple things to consider. We're actually running analysis on a couple of our properties on this right now is, you know, if you're doing the short-term rental, you need to decide if you want that to be a job for you or if you want somebody else to manage that, because you are having to turn those properties over for guests more regularly. So having a manager may be an expense that you need to factor in there. And yes, you may make more revenue, but you also have to take into consideration you might have more expenses or more wear and tear on the property. So furniture, housekeeping, like additional yard maintenance, like all these other little things add up in there that you just need to factor in for it. And then also, you know, just depending on your market, if you are, you know, using one of your properties as an Airbnb or a short-term rental, the clientele, depending on your competition, could be quite picky. And so there are certain areas where, you know, there are professional like equity companies that run these almost like hotels and have like full-blown management, like rhythms that they're running. And you may be kind of a mom and pop competing with a really large-scale organization that's mastered this. So just consider those things when you're evaluating it, because it is a little bit more nuanced than sometimes people make it out to be. What are other ways you guys can do real estate?
Well, you've got your short-term rentals, which to me is 30 days or less. And then you have something that I would call a medium-term rental, which is typically a furnished minimum of 30-day rentals. And this is kind of popping up, at least in Austin, because A, we have a lot of people moving here. So people are looking for basically short-term furnished corporate housing. And then in Austin, we do have a lot of restrictions around how many short-term Airbnbs there can be. And so this way you've got a short-ish term property. But it's not going to have the kind of turnover. You're not going to be cleaning it every week necessarily. So it might be somebody who's renting it for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, up to 6 months. And we actually had one of these before the pandemic. We had one, and then I kind of chickened out. And I turned it into a regular term rental. Plus I didn't want the hassle, if I'm honest, but we started it right before the pandemic, and it was a lot of work. It was more work, I think, than I was, even though I had an assistant and everything that was helping me with it, but it was a lot more little stuff. And I'm sure if I had stuck with it and I'd gotten kind of everything right, you know, the thing about a rental property is you kind of have to, the first 6 months are the worst because you don't know the quirks of the property. You don't know what's going to go wrong. And then once you kind of get through that, it's definitely a lot easier.
A friend of mine was talking with me about her executive MBA experience, and it really got me thinking. You know, it's a big investment. It's expensive. It's time consuming, and you're gambling on who you'll meet, who your professors are going to be, and what you're actually going to get out of it. Our conversation reminded me of why we created Empire Circle at Her Best Life. We flipped the script and created something really special for our experiential learners like me. While academia is absolutely important to our community as a whole, it doesn't always equate to what we need while we are building the big business in real time. With Empire Circle, you'll learn from women who've actually built the big businesses and who are still in the arena doing it. You don't have to step away. Our retreats take you to exotic locations instead of classrooms where you'll grow your revenue, hone your strategy, find your community, and expand your big, beautiful life all in real time. Why step out of your business when you can step into Empire Circle? Apply for Empire Circle now at herbestlife.com.
And then you've got long-term rentals, of course, which everybody is probably familiar with, which is you're usually renting for a year to 2 years at a time and turning it over at that point. So
I love that. Well, you know, and when you're evaluating what you want to do with your property, this is something we personally have been going through right now, which is you need to know what your goals are for your wealth building. Because there's, as we talked in our previous three episodes, there's two different ways to play this game. One is the long-term equity pay down and appreciation, where you're buying in you know, markets that you believe are going to appreciate over time. And you're also buying right. So you're buying with some equity at the beginning. But you also have the cash flow game that you can play too. And so getting clear on what it is you're wanting is going to dictate that. Like a lot of our rentals, like our first one we bought, right? We've had the same tenant for 17 years now. Well, the odds are if you've had the same rental, you know, tenant for that long, like our rental rates of raising our rents over and over and over and over again are not going to be as high as some of the other ones in the neighborhood because we haven't had to re-carpet, we haven't had to repaint, we haven't had to, you know, like restage and repair everything because the same people have been in there for 17 years. So our cash flow is less on it because our appreciation game and the long-term equity play is the game. But now maybe that we're having a conversation of like, Seychelle and Nick really want to buy a property on a lake with a dock and they want to gain additional cash flow to be able to buy that without having to like make, you know, take on additional quote unquote jobs or additional income streams. They want to buy it with passive income. Well, then maybe our cash flow conversation changes versus just the appreciation equity game. So just wanted to throw that out there because we're personally playing that game right now a little bit and looking at how we want to do it.
That's a good thing. The other thing that you can do with real estate is, of course, commercial. So we've been talking a lot about residential, of course, your first mm-hmm. house, short-term rentals, medium-term rentals, long-term rentals, making sure that you're understanding your long-term goals with that. But the other big piece and something that I've been now investing in for the last, I guess, 3 years now mm-hmm. is commercial real estate. And yeah. The big thing that drove us towards that was we have businesses. So we have, I think total businesses that I own is I think 16 now. And so they have space, they need space. Most of them, need space to operate. And so we thought it was best to, instead of paying rent to a landlord that owns the building, which is what we were doing for many years, for our DC Metro, real estate team, why not own it ourselves and have the real estate business paying rent to ourselves? Mm-hmm. And so that was a big driver for us. It just made sense being that we love real estate. Anytime you pay rent when you love real estate is not a good feeling. But then the secondary, which ended up being the bigger benefit for us, which I didn't understand it at mm-hmm. the time when we bought our first commercial building, was something called accelerated depreciation. Mm-hmm. And you can do that when you are in the real estate industry. You can accelerate the depreciation on your real estate. And so we hired a company that did a cost segregation study for us of our commercial building. And it ended up saving over $600,000 in taxes. Like real money, our first one. And then mm-hmm. we did all of our residential properties as well, because you can do it on residential as well. And then every year we look to buy more buildings and we're just putting them in places where our businesses are. So mm-hmm. if that's where our business is, that's where we're investing right now. And so commercial is a great investment to make in real estate as well.
That's so smart. Well, I guess you're buying the drinks. Change
my mind. Yeah. We will make sure you have a drink, Wendy. Don't worry.
But Sarah, I don't know. I'm fasting right now. Maybe that's why I'm thinking. But Sarah, do you want to tell everybody? I love your story about you yes. finding your first commercial building. Like, will you share that with our listeners?
Yeah. So commercial. So for us that are in residential, we have our way of selling real estate, right? And mm-hmm. it's everything's in the MLS, not everything, but a lot is in the MLS. It's we communicate very well to our clients and to each other. And that's sort of residential real estate. When we started wanting to buy a building, I started realizing the commercial side of real estate is a whole different ballgame. It is a old boys club, like a small, like lots of properties are not listed anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you have to really like work hard to find a property. So you can't just rely on it being on LoopNet, mm-hmm. or even, on CoStar. CoStar is the LoopNet is the public version of the MLS for commercial. CoStar is the actual MLS. And so when I realized that, I was like, okay, so we've got to do some like searching. So I was driving around almost every weekend looking for signs or buildings that looked to be abandoned. And I found this sign that was so old, I could barely read the phone number, took a picture of it, called the agent. It had great road frontage, which we wanted because it was right close to our main farm area. We're very branded here and we wanted to have a sign up. And I had to call the agent, I don't know, 3 to 4 times over 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Finally got a call back. And we found the building I'm standing in right now. And it was really from like, you can't rely on just what is available, mm-hmm. looks to be available. And then the building that we've just bought next door to us, we just approached the owner and said, we want to buy it and let's figure it out. He's like, well, I have no interest in selling. And I said, well, yeah, well, everyone has an interest in selling. What's the number? You know, and we worked out a win-win there, but that was never on the MLS. If someone was searching for a building, they would have they didn't know that building could have been purchased. So commercial is very different. There's a lot of networking that goes on. Mm-hmm. And it's a slower process, and communication. A good residential business, it could dominate commercial. Like, I'm always like, we need more residential,
I know,
like, that's thinking right. to dominate that
it's so
industry.
True. It's
like,
so true.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's interesting about buying commercial is that when you buy a residential property, your finances and everything are kind of on the hook for that property when you go to get your loan. And mm-hmm. when you get a commercial loan, it's actually different because the commercial lender is looking at the value of the property really kind of as the collateral, and do the numbers make sense? Like, is the rent going to cover the monthly note? And so you actually have less liability, weirdly, when you're buying a commercial property than you do, because first of all, you've got a lender who's reviewing all the financials. Like, they're not going to give you a loan before they do all that. And then the property itself becomes the collateral versus like when you have a residential property, everything else you own is your collateral. So it's a lot less liability, which is opposite of what you think it would be.
Mm-hmm. That's so good, Wendy. I know we need to move on, but one more thing on that. I actually learned how to evaluate property by getting the loan for this building. Mm-hmm. Because what the bank had us do and the questions they asked and the forms they had us fill out, I was like, oh my, like it is very good on how they evaluate whether or not it's a good purchase and whether or not they will lend on it. The other thing too is like you create a relationship with typically a small mm-hmm. local bank because they like to invest in commercial.
Yes.
They like to give mortgages on commercial and they feel like they're part of the community and helping the businesses grow. And so it's a different for our listeners. I know that you guys are, you know, empire builders just as we are. And it's fun because that's really the empire sort of building part of real estate mm-hmm. in terms of like from a business standpoint. So I really loved commercial and learning it so far and investing in it.
I love that. So guys, real quick, let's start with what's the worst part about investing in real estate? I know with residential, you are dealing with people. So it's not mm-hmm. like the stock market. You have like real people involved and it's their home typically that you're dealing with. So there's a lot of emotions there. Does anybody have like I have a bad rental story. So this was early on. Actually, it's the house we turned into our office, but we bought a house mm-hmm. off of Craigslist in the early 2000s. And remember Craigslist like way back when?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an older home. It was built in the 30s. And instead of the house being built with 2x4s, it was built with 2x6s. Cool. So the stability of some of the ceilings was a lot less. And one of my tenants called me and he said, hey, the ceiling collapsed in one of the bedrooms. He was like, of course he was freaking out because there's all kinds of like insulation and everything.
Debris and yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not cool. Like, cause then you're thinking like, well, are the rest of the, is the rest of the house going to fall in on itself? And of course we got it all fixed up and we cleaned it up and they wanted to move out, which I, which I did understand. I mean, I completely understood why they would have that feeling. But it was really uncomfortable cause I was like a new landlord and I was kind of, I don't know, I was being kind of hard nosed and in retrospect, I was like, Wendy, come on. Like, that was really scary. They could have, like, one of them could have been sleeping.
You know? You're like, why are you freaking out? I'm falling down.
Yeah. So it was pretty funny. So that was probably my worst one.
We had like a house that I didn't believe in like bad juju or karma like intensely until we owned this house. And we bought it as a foreclosure. And I don't know what someone did to hex this house, but y'all, it was like, if it could happen, it happened at this house. We had like one of the tenants, her kid ran her Corvette through the garage door. Like we had someone pass away in a really not great way in the house. We had like, we found a 40 pound beehive underground that was swarming the house here. Like, I mean, it, y'all, it was.
Someone
had been washing their hair. One of the tenants, these are all different tenants. Someone had washed their hair in the kitchen sink and all the hair had dangled in the garbage disposal and then it exploded. And, I mean, y'all, if it could happen, it happened. Needless to say, we sold the house. But you know what the best part about real estate was? We still made a profit on the sale of the house, even though it was hexed. And definitely bad juju on that house. But we
do you remember the address?
What?
Do you remember the address of that one? What was the address?
Hold on. Just out of curiosity. It was 9400 Fenway. I had to think about it for a second. So, yeah. I won't tell you what city because now everyone's going to go Google and see if people like have had bad things happen to them in that house. But it was bad.
Do you manage your own property, Sarah, or you have a property manager?
I do.
My mom's amazing executive assistant manages all of our properties. We are about to hire a property manager for a building we're purchasing in Richmond. But it's because it's too far and it's a complicated building. So, but no, I don't manage much of it, which I'm thankful for.
I think
perfectly. No, that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's kind of like when Jay sometimes talks about our rental properties, he's like, oh, it's all fine. Like I don't have any weird stories. It's like, oh, you well, know.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I didn't tell you about all of them. Yeah. I didn't mention them all. So There you go. So that's probably the worst part about that. Also, you need it's not really passive. You know, you either gotta hire a property manager or you've gotta you gotta do it yourself. People talk about real estate being passive, but it's not really passive, especially for the short term rentals. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
And then you need to pay for repairs. So you gotta have a couple months of reserves there. It's not like the stock market where you just it's no hassle. But what do you guys think the best parts of this kind of investment are?
Well, for me, it's what I know. And so it just gives me peace of mind when I'm buying real estate because it's what I do every day and it's what I know. And the stock market, it's taken us so long to invest in it just because I needed to understand it. And it took me many years and asking a lot of questions. My poor financial advisor followed up with me for like 2.5 years before getting a dime because I wanted to fully understand all of it. And it's so for me, it's like the confidence I have in it. Everyone will always need a home. And so to me, it's I know it and I know that it's a need. So,
well, also, unlike the stock market, it's never going to go down to zero because there will always be the value of the land. And then if you've got a house on it, there's commodities in the house. So there's appliances, there's copper, there's wood. I mean, like it's never going to go down to nothing. Like literally you could own a piece of a business that goes right down to zero and it's worth nothing.
So, I mean, think about these businesses that are doing that. I mean, like crypto even, you know, that was this steady stable, right? It's just like poof, almost to nothing. Yeah. you know, I think about too, if you hold it long enough, some of these stocks, like, you're not in control of the business. And so you could be invested in something, it could be spiraling down, and you think, well, if I just hold it long enough, it'll bounce back, but you're not really in control of that. In real estate, if it's spiraling down in a down market, the odds are in your favor that it will bounce back if you hold it long enough. And so it's a patience game when a market's spiraling, but at least it is, to Wendy's point, it's a commodity and an asset that you can physically see, touch, smell, hold, and still sell it down the road while you're paying it off still. So you're still paying it down even in a down market. You're still gaining something.
Well, I love that. And not only can you can control it, but you can also improve real estate.
Yes.
So you can take a residential property and get it to be zoned commercial. You can tear the house down and build two houses on it. That's kind of what that's been our journey in these last couple of years, is figuring out how to create, because the land, honestly, in Austin is what's worth everything. And so can we put an ADU on something? Can we put two houses and create more rent that way? If you have a 40-pound underground beehive in it, you can make honey. It could be another. It could be another
stream of income.
Well, and then the best of all, which I think I said in the beginning, right? It's the only investment that you don't have to pay 100% cash for, and then other people can pay the remainder. So you put down 20% cash, 25% cash, and then you have a renter paying off the rest. And yet you own 100%. Like, it's magic. Like, it's magical. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing. And so you can leverage other people's money, both the banks and also your renters, and you can write that off. And so many benefits to owning real estate.
Yeah, so many benefits. Yeah. And if you're a realtor, you get a lot of tax benefits from it. I know a lot of our listeners are realtors. So guys. If you're not investing in real estate, make sure that you start by go ahead and just buy your first home, right? For those of you that don't own your own home, if you can't afford it, go ahead and house hack it. You know, I had a little coaching client in Oklahoma City, and when I explained house hacking to him, it was an absolute no-brainer. I think he's 22 years old, and he's like, absolutely, I have friends that could move in, they could help me pay the rent.
Yeah.
So do that, and then work your way up. Do what Seychelle did, do what I did, which is your first home becomes your first rental. Piece of cake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Even if your house might be bigger, you might consider a lateral move, right? Doesn't necessarily have to be a move up. Consider a lateral move. Because what that does is you can buy your second home with a lot less money down. You can put 5% down, 10% down. You don't have to save up 20 or 25%. And just understand that rentals are their work. They're not passive income. And yet, when I think about the work that I do every month and the amount of money that I get back for it, it's very, very low. My dollar per hour on my rentals is really low. So I would just encourage you guys to really get your investing hat on, right? The opportunity is now. Okay, you guys are listening to this in January of 2023. There's going to be massive, massive opportunities for you. You're going to be looking back in 5 years or 10 years and saying, oh, wow, I wish I'd invested in 2023 and real estate is going to be the number one, the number one investment out there that you wish you had done. So get off your duff, figure it out. Do like Sarah said, don't take 2.5 years to figure out the stock market.
Yeah.
but look at the people around you and go out there. And this is going to be a really big part of your big life someday. So go out, continue to build your big business and create an even bigger life. Bye guys.
Bye guys. Bye. Just a reminder, you guys, as we are running through this awesome wealth building and money series with you, we just want to give you a quick blanket reminder, because our friends at Keller Williams and the legal team would thank us for it, that we are not financial advisors, CPA, tax advisors, or anyone that is tied to your individual finances. So if you are wanting more information about this, these are tips, ideas, tactics, and ways in which you can build wealth, but always find a seasoned professional that is a seasoned professional in this specific field that you're needing help with to assist you in your finance, tax, or wealth building journey.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.